From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Many Granite Staters say getting outdoors has been their saving grace during the pandemic, and that they took advantage of the weather this summer and fall for walking, hiking, biking, running, and swimming. But now it's cold, it's dark, and roads and sidewalks can be icy. So how to get that badly needed physical and mental boost that exercise provides? Well, today in The Exchange, we're here with ideas and encouragement on staying active this pandemic winter. And what better place to begin our discussion about staying fit in the cold than at the top of Mount Washington. With us now to start off the show is Jay Broccolo, a summit observer and meteorologist with the Mount Washington Observatory. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How's the weather up there today, Jay?
Yeah, it's actually, relatively speaking, it's pretty nice. It's cloudy out, but we can see about, let's see, how far can we see? We can see about 60 to 70 miles right now. Winds are out of the west at 33 miles per hour. It's a little chilly out. There's a wind chill sitting around in the minus teens below zero. But yeah, it's cold.
Well, we wouldn't expect anything else this time of year up there, Jay. What are your winter outdoor tasks? And how much time outside do they require? What do you have to do?
Let's see. So every hour we have to go out at least to take our hourly weather observation, which only takes a few minutes at the minimum. Sometimes it can take 10 to 15, depending on how dry the air is or how cold it is or what's going on. In the winter, though, that changes a lot because we have a lot of icing that happens on our instruments. So, you know, on nice icing days, we only have to go out, you know, once an hour to de-ice the instruments. But that's on the top of the tower, which has it's open to the free air so that there's nothing stopping the wind. There's no friction. So got to be dressed warm for that. And yeah, just really taking care of the snow that piles up here. But other times outside is really in transportation when we take our snowcat up like we do today. Sometimes if visibility is really, really bad, we have to guide the snowcat by person or our vehicles. Or sometimes we just like to play outside.
So, wow, play outside. You'll have to tell me about that in a minute. But so you go out once an hour to do, you know, your weather check and also to de-ice the equipment. Do you take turns, Jay, or is that you going out every hour?
Well, it kind of depends on what's going on, right? So there's three of us up here. Two of us work during the day and one works during the night. The night observer is fortunate enough to have to do 12 observations. So if it's icing out, they're responsible for all 12 hours of de-icing. If it's really bad, obviously one of us day observers will help out, usually the person who is not on morning obs. But during the day, there's two of us. So it's really just whoever can, but usually it's the person who's doing the observations just because they're the ones who's paying most attention to the instruments at that time.
You know, one of the things that I don't like about winter is having to put on a whole mess of clothes and boots and, you know, hats and gloves and everything before I go outside, even for the most minimal of reasons. So is that what you're doing all day long? Like taking it off and putting it on and taking it off again?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when we have interns or new people come, that is what they do. But then the longer you get here, the more you just kind of get used to wearing your winter gear. But the trick is you do not want to sweat whatsoever. So we just try to stay warm, but cold enough to you know, not be sweating. So yeah, our snow pants will take off. Our boots may come on or off if our feet are sweating. So yeah, it's very subjective and dependent on the person, I would say.
But that's a really important point, and I know we're going to talk about that with our full hour guests. You want to be warm, but you don't want to sweat. So you have to take off enough clothes, right, Jay, so that you don't sweat inside. Because if you go back outside and you're the tiniest bit sweaty, what's going to happen?
Oh, yeah, you get cold. And once you're wet and cold, and I learned this early in Boy Scouts, but like huh, you can't get warm again. You just can't. It's really hard to. So yeah, we'll have to take some layers off. But the main thing is also having a protective layer, like a hard shell or some type of shell to keep the moisture from the outside coming in. It's already hard enough to deal with moisture on the inside. You don't want to add any moisture from the outside.
Is just being outside in the wind up there, Jay, is that kind of a workout in and of itself? Kind of like swimming, but standing?
Yeah, it is. Actually, you know, swimming is, I never really thought about swimming as an analogy, but it almost is in the respect that it's a lot of resistance, but also when the wind is blowing in your face, it's really hard to breathe because the wind is actually like sucking the air out of your lungs. That's another reason why we wear the balaclavas too, because they really help, you know, keep that wind out of your mouth so you can breathe there without having it sucked out.
Well, the last time I was there, it was, you know, it was actually a clear, beautiful day, but it was very windy. And I thought, this is kind of like swimming, you know, pushing my way through this wind. So how do you maintain a fitness routine, Jay, when you're on the mountain in winter? Or is just the de-icing and dealing with the wind, is that enough of a workout?
I mean, it can be. If you're doing it often enough, it certainly is a workout. And I would say staying fit is, again, a very subjective thing. A lot of people tend to work it into their daily habits. You know, we live and work here. You know, I sleep just downstairs, and then I come to work, and all I have to do is go upstairs with my coffee. So we have a hang board here that sits over a wall where we can do pull-ups. We have pull-up bars. We have a treadmill, actually, that we just got from a very awesome donor. We have some barbells and stuff. So we have 15 minutes at the end of every hour to do our weather observations. So usually whenever we have a little bit of extra time or the observation doesn't take the full 15 minutes, you know, I'll hop on the treadmill for 5 minutes or go lift some weights. Or we do a lot of body workouts up here, not so much weight training. You know, the shoveling is always a good workout.
Yeah, that's a workout.
Yeah. Well, and just going up to the tower is like 70 feet. So,
right. Climbing. And again, with that wind. So last question for you, Jay, as we'll discuss with our guests who are coming up, for a lot of people, a big issue with winter exercise is really just motivation. You know, it isn't what you do or how you do it. It's just getting that right attitude about getting out. What's your attitude about getting out in the face of, you know, what famously is the world's worst weather?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's really easy because I have such a love for crazy weather and just like the dynamics of the weather. So being in it and outside in it really kind of gives you that firsthand thought. But the rest of the times, you know, when you're not feeling super motivated, I think it's really important to work it into your schedule and to build over time to you know, so your body gets used to it, so your brain gets used to it, so your you know, work day gets used to it.
Jay, it's really nice to talk to you. Thank you very much. That's Jay Broccolo from the Mount Washington Observatory. And Exchange listeners, how are you feeling about staying active this winter? We'd love to hear your ideas, your adaptations, and your worries about getting those mental and physical health benefits that exercise provides, even with the challenges of a New Hampshire winter in a pandemic. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And we're talking this hour with Jay Davis, Assistant Dean of Undergraduate Students at Dartmouth College, where he directs the first generation student programs. Jay Davis is also head coach of the Ford Sayre Bill Koch League Nordic program in the Upper Valley. Also with us, Liz Durant, owner of Affinity Fitness, a fitness and nutrition company providing personal training, nutrition, and lifestyle coaching. Liz is also an instructor at several Concord area gyms. Well, welcome to both of you. And I'd like to ask both of you that question that I just asked Jay Broccolo. Part of winter exercise isn't what you do, where you do it, how you do it, but it's just getting motivated to do anything. The dark and cold can unmotivate a lot of us. So, Jay Davis, you first. What's your winter exercise attitude?
Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
You know, I love winter and have my whole life. And so I think that's a bit of a maybe unfair advantage over some. So I'll talk to those who may not have the sort of intuitive love of getting out when it's cold, and particularly when it's cold and dark. But there is a bit of more of a sense of accomplishment and sort of that sense of, I did it, I got out, you know, like that big book that you don't want to read, but you want to have read. And I think just when you come back in, that sense of, okay, wow, I got out there and I did something, and it was 35 degrees and a little bit of rain in the air. And there is something about that setting of challenge and like, hey, this is doing something that's good for me. It's getting me out. And particularly in these times where we're inside so much, I don't think people, very rarely do people regret it when they actually get out and do it. You come back in and there's a sense of, yeah, I'm really glad I did it.
How about you, Liz? What's your winter exercise motivation or mantra?
Well, I had a great answer prepared, but now that I've listened to Jay Brokula talk, I think I'm going to adopt the mantra, if Jay can do it, anybody can do it. honestly, I'm inspired just listening to him.
Right.
I think that Jay Davis is right. I mean, when you like winter, it's a very different set of challenges than when maybe you struggle with winter a little bit. I think 2020 has been so unique in that way too, that it's brought so many different challenges than maybe some of us have experienced in the past, in the way our work environments have changed, our home environments have changed, our travel, our activities and everything. So there are kind of four things that, you know, that I focus on, both myself and with the clients that I work with, many of whom are women over 50 who need to take care of themselves while they take care of others. And I think this year, especially, there's nothing more important than physical and mental health that we need to take care of. So, you know, one of the things that I do is try to really focus on my why. Why do I want to do this? And, you know, for Jay Davis, it might be why, because I love winter, right? I love getting outside. I love winter. It's a challenge. It's even more challenging in the winter. That may be the why that gets him out the door every day. It can be physical. It can be mental. It can be emotional. You know, for athletes, sometimes it's to maintain their fitness through the winter so they can be race ready in the spring. Some of us, it's maintaining our sanity, you know, whatever it is. But identifying that why first, I think really helps, because then you can start to make a plan. And with a plan comes scheduling in that exercise during the week, and then really being intentional about it. I find that when we're intentional about things, whether it's our weekly plan or sticking with our why, they're much stronger and more influential than motivation. And if I intend to do something, the likelihood of me doing it is much higher than if I try to find the motivation. So
that's interesting.
Given the
yeah.
fact, yeah. And that's more of a mindset sort of approach to things. And so that kind of leads to the fourth thing, which is remaining flexible. You know, obviously with winter time is a time you've got to remain a little nimble. You've got to remain flexible. 2020 has been the year of pivoting. And so whatever you want to call it, sometimes we just have to give ourselves grace and remain flexible. But we need to prioritize those intentions. And I think that becomes really important, because the last thing is that imperfect action is far more important than no action at all or perfect action. And I think that's kind of the mantra we have to live by, not only in the winter, but also in 2020, is that it's better to take imperfect action, no matter what that looks like.
You know, people are already jumping in on this topic, and I'm really happy to hear from folks this morning. Questions and comments about staying fit, staying active in winter time. And give us a call if you're feeling unmotivated. We are not going to judge you, because a lot of people are in that boat. Join us. 1-800-892-6477 is the number here in the Exchange. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Jay and Liz, let's go to Ari calling from Marlboro. Hi, Ari. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. I'm not sure I'm in Marlboro. I'm driving up 101 to go cross-country skiing, and I'm one of these Sam Evans Brown type cross-country ski evangelists. But I wanted to point out that there are a lot of trails all over the state of New Hampshire. And I actually partnered with someone who's developed an app in the Midwest and have a list of them. So it's not always the big places you hear about, like Jackson or Waterville Valley. There's a lot of places that's right in your backyard. It's called SkiWise, SkiWise-app.com. And then you can post trail conditions. I would say that I was in Keene and the grass was green, and 10 miles up in the mountains, there's a foot of snow. So, you know, it's a good way to get out there and stay warm and stay socially distant from people this winter.
So Ari, you're gonna have to give us that name again, just so folks heard it, because that's good information. Because you're right, snow conditions for Nordic skiing vary greatly, even within a 10 or 15 mile radius. So give us that again, please, Ari.
Yeah, only a few places have man-made snow, so it's often, it might be good
right
at home. Called Skiwise, S-K-I-W-I-S-E. And if you go
okay
to skiwise-app.com, you can find it. I think it has about 50 trails in New Hampshire.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in, Ari. And Jay Davis, this is right up your alley. I'd love for you to talk about what you're seeing in Nordic in general in New Hampshire and what you're expecting this year, given that, you know, people need to get out.
Yeah. And that's, and thanks so much for that call, too. It's a great app to have. And certainly at my house, 5 miles from my house, there's snow to ski on and my lawn is green up in Lyme, New Hampshire. So it does vary so much. And I would say what we've seen in New Hampshire, certainly spring, summer and fall, with huge numbers of people who are getting out, many of them sort of for the first time, realizing sort of the natural world around them, the number of different opportunities it provides. I think we are for sure going to see that with skiing, with cross-country skiing, with alpine skiing, certainly with ice skating as well. There's just a lot of interest now, and there's not as many other opportunities. And so people turn to, okay, what can I do? And one of the things that I love about cross-country skiing is that you can literally do it outside your door if you have snow, right? And an ability to just sort of get out there and throw on some skis. There's also, of course, wonderful ski areas. We're going to hear about those in a little bit, I think, that are really realizing, I think, their importance this year, particularly, as Liz talked about, for mental health, for sort of finding joy, and certainly for just physical activity and using our bodies. There's a role that ski areas are playing, that local trail systems. I was talking to a friend in Concord last night, and I think there are 31 different mapped trail systems just in the Concord area. Golf courses, town parks are just wonderful places to get out, even if it's just for a walk. I think that there really is a need for this, and we are certainly feeling it with the ski club that I work with, that we have to make this work, and we have to find safe ways to do it for sure. But whatever we can do that gets people outside, that's going to be just all for the better.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like cross-country skiing is sort of the ultimate pandemic sport, right? I mean, you're outside. You can't get too close to other people because you'll hit them with your skis. So, you know, it's kind of perfect.
It's exactly right. And I think it's with the club that we run and getting the kids out, the social distance piece, once you're on snow, it is just as you say, it's pretty hard to run into each other, or at least you try to avoid it. And there is just something about getting out and getting away from screens and getting into, there's a clarity of air in the winter, right? There's just a crystal component to it that I think it's you can't get that inside. And so when the weather allows and you can get out there and do it, there are so many options in New Hampshire that as the caller just alluded to, it's finding out about them, right? And I know the community of skiers and of outdoor enthusiasts has become much stronger, certainly online. One place with the screen
is helpful. Yeah, we'll put a link to that site that Ari mentioned on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. So Liz Durant, what's the balance of your own winter exercise in terms of indoors versus outdoors? Because I know you like to lift the weights as well as get out.
Yeah, I think everybody has sort of their thing that they enjoy. And one of the things that I have found is that works really well for my particular routine is I really try to change it up in the wintertime, because the majority of what I train for, get ready for, actually occurs in the other three seasons. I find that for me, winter really is a time to sort of double down on some things, such as strength training, such as, you know, flexibility and stability training. It's a great time for some athletes. It is off-season work. For other athletes, it is their season. So they're actually doing those things in opposite seasons. So a lot depends on what you really enjoy and what you enjoy doing, whether it's winter sports, whether it's summer sports. I think there's a definite, you know, engagement in just getting outside. So that for me is a priority, and whatever way I can do it safely is getting outside as much as possible. It's just with the days being shorter, that window of opportunity might close in a little bit.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
I find other ways to balance that out. And I really try to make it really intentional as to what I'm doing. So I really focus on creating some variety in my routines, and then planning it out so that I have that thing that gets back to that motivation, that has that thing to sort of keep you moving forward, sticking with something that's working for you. And then if it snows 10 feet, you know, bonus. So it's, it's really about figuring out what do you love to do, you know, outside or inside. What are your goals for the winter? Setting some goals, maybe that are different than what you would do the other three seasons. And, you know, there's a term that, you know, I'm sure Jay's really familiar with called periodization, where essentially as an athlete, you periodize your level of activity. And one of the most important periods in all of that is a little bit of variety or off season for some people who do a lot more on the other season. So, you know, depending on what kind of maybe athletic things you pursue, or if you're a recreational person, I also think picking something new. I mean, I, for a long time, have wanted to learn to skate ski well. I'm an awful skate skier. So that's something that I've put on my list for this winter, because I think there'll be a lot of opportunity for it. And it's hard work to learn that, Jay. And so, you know, I think my kids are really good skate skiers, so I can't keep up with them. And so it really, for me, it's like picking something that is different and new, maybe different than running, but that's going to allow me that sort of engagement and mental and physical and emotional commitment that is going to make winter feel like it's going to fly by if you can't be outside all the time.
So Liz, how much are your clients looking to set up spaces at home where they can work out this winter? Because I have heard it's very difficult to find just plain old fashioned dumbbells these days.
It is, Laura. And that's such a great, topic, because I get asked the question all the time. There is a lot more equipment back out in the market these days, I've been noticing. There were some supply chain issues earlier on during the quarantines and the lockdowns. But what I've seen and what I've heard from some other people is that the pricing is nuts. So there's sort of a rule of thumb that I've been hearing out there, or reading out there a little bit, you know, $1 per pound for a dumbbell.
Yes, I've heard that too. That,
yeah, and I'm like, really?
That sounds like a lot.
Yes. It is a lot. I think it's a lot, but I think you can use a lot of things at home. I'm always happy to talk with somebody about what they've got around their house that works great for equipment. And honestly, as Jay said, body weight workouts are fantastic. Like, you don't need a lot of equipment. With just a few basics, like a yoga mat, and, you know, maybe a couple light dumbbells, some bands, you can do a ton at home and not have a fancy gym. That should not prevent you or keep you from being able to get some workout done inside.
Liz, and I apologize, I got to cut you off there, but we will be right back after a short break. Lots of emails, so stay with us.
Old Man Winter is at our doorsteps, and staying active in the coming months may pose a challenge. One solution: become an NHPR sustainer today for a chance to win a Peloton bike, plus a one-year all-access membership to online classes, both live and on demand. But don't wait. We're picking the lucky winner this Saturday at noon, making your year-end tax-deductible gift as quick and easy at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. If cold weather and gloomy skies, not to mention a pandemic, are sapping your motivation to stay active this winter, well, today we're talking about how you can maintain fitness despite it all. And so, listeners, let's hear from you. Do you find yourself opting out of exercise once it gets dark and cold, and maybe needing some motivation? Or if you're a huge winter sports enthusiast, what's your secret? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And our next caller is Dan in Campton. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Go ahead, Dan.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Dan. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I just took up disc golf at the end of the summer. And the course that I play at, we play at night. We play a lot of glow golf. So we go out around 6:30, get back around 9:30 or 10. It's a good hike in the woods and chase a little plastic. And it seems to have filled in my stick season sport.
So disc golf, Dan, and I actually have played that. But for listeners who don't know what disc golf is, just explain.
Well, you basically have discs. People might refer to them as a frisbee, but they're actually designed discs. And You have baskets. It's set up kind of like a golf course. It's pretty popular down south. It's gaining popularity in the Northeast. Maine's actually more popular. I think it's more popular in Maine. But the course I play in particular, they're into playing night golf. So you have your disc actually made of material that will glow with a UV light. So you hit that a little bit, and then you have lights on the baskets you can see where you're throwing to.
Oh, and, that's awesome.
You just go out and hike up and down the hill, throw discs.
Yeah, because, again, to let people know, you know, the baskets that you have to throw these frisbees or discs at are pretty far apart, so you definitely get some exercise. I had not heard about the night disc golf, so that's great, Dan. Thank you very much for calling in and giving us a new idea. I had not thought about that. Thank you. We're going to go now to Jessica Keeler, Executive Director of Ski NH. That's a statewide association representing 30 alpine and cross-country resorts in New Hampshire. And Jessica, great to have you. A lot of people are asking about what skiing and boarding and Nordic are going to look like this year. So we really appreciate you being with us. How will downhill ski resorts look different this year? What's important to know, Jessica?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. I think it's important to know that people should really do their homework before they head to the slopes. So that means getting online, finding out if they need to buy a ticket in advance, for example, or if they're expecting to do rentals, do they need to order those in advance? Likewise with lessons, et cetera, et cetera. And also the experience as far as indoors goes is going to be different as well. So we're really trying to minimize the number of people that are inside at any given time in any of the lodges, in you know, the different buildings that would maybe have rentals or ski school, that sort of thing. So expect to, you know, you're most likely going to be having to boot up at your car. You know, so come with your snow pants on, your jacket, all that, and have your boots and your helmet and your gloves ready, and put those on at the car in order to get up to the, you know, up to the ticket lines, up to the, sorry, not the ticket lines, the lift lines. And, you know, just expect things to be a bit different. It's going to be, you're going to be spending a lot more time outside this year, I think, than maybe you would in other years, you know, certainly if you're going to a ski area.
Yeah, the head of Pat's Peak, Jessica, said, think of your car as your base lodge. And, you know, that's where you're going to, you know, put the boots on, put everything on, get all set for the day. What about, though, people do need to go to the bathroom. They do need to get something hot to drink. I mean, will people be able to go inside at all and warm up a little bit from, you know, being out in the mountain?
Yeah, so it is going to vary a little bit by resort because every resort... So they've had to adapt accordingly. Yeah, some places, you know, you'll be able to go inside, go to the bathroom. There probably will be people limiting the number who can come in at a time, you know, and sort of tracking that. Other places are actually planning to have porta potties, which probably doesn't sound that pleasant, but, you know, they're looking for, you know, some of the bigger, more fancy ones that you might find, for example, at a wedding or that sort of thing. But you will be able to go inside, and certainly with food and beverage, there's going to be a lot of grab and go options. I know some guys have talked about even doing like a advanced ordering online, where you order online and then you go pick it up. Other places are doing reservations. So if you make a reservation for inside the lodge, then you can go in and get your food in there. Like I said, so that's where it all comes back to this know before you go concept. You want to just kind of get a sense of what the resort is doing for all these different things, just so that you don't show up and are you know, disappointed or can't figure out what's going on.
100%.
Yeah. I do urge people to be patient with this, you know, because we're all learning, we're all adapting, and that goes for the ski areas and their staff as well.
Right. So no more just kind of getting up in the morning and going, wow, it's snowing, it's Sunday, let's go. You have to kind of be more mindful about it than that. What about the cross-country ski areas, Jessica? How are they feeling as the winter approaches?
Yeah, I think they're really optimistic, actually. I just had a great forum with a bunch of our cross-country members yesterday, and I think they're looking forward to the season. There's been a lot of excitement about that. And as you know, Jay and Liz were talking about before, it's definitely an easy sport to get into. You know, it starts off easier. You can spend a lot more time outside. I think there's a lot less time in lodges, for example. So I think that people are looking at more time cross-country skiing this year. Plus there's snowshoeing. So even if cross-country skiing doesn't sound like something you want to do, a lot of those trails are also used for snowshoeing. So excitement on the part of the cross-country folks that it's going to be a good year for them.
What about the downhill mountains, Jessica? What are they seeing so far in terms of season pass sales and sort of early enthusiasm?
Yeah, there's been a lot of early enthusiasm, particularly this fall. Season pass sales started kind of going through the roof, you know, as people realized that there were potentially going to be limitations on the number sold. And really the limitations are less based on hill capacity as they are on indoor capacity. So we've seen a lot of ticket sales, a lot of record-setting year, you know, the record-setting year for pass sales. And, you know, I think that there's also, same thing, you know, a lot of enthusiasm. People want to get outside. You know, we saw that a lot over the summer. People just wanted to go hiking. They wanted to do activities, anything outside, you know, because it's considered safe outside. And that, you know, the ski industry is no different in that regard. You know, you can spend a lot of time doing some really having a good time outside skiing, whether it's downhill, cross country, et cetera.
Well, Jessica, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Jessica Keeler, Executive Director of Ski NH, a statewide association representing the Alpine and cross country resorts in New Hampshire. Our guests for the hour are Liz Durant and Jay Davis. Liz owns Affinity Fitness and teaches at several Concord area gyms. Jay is an assistant dean at Dartmouth and is a Nordic ski coach. And both of you, I want to go to our listeners. And Chris in Hooksett says, the combination of the pandemic and colder, darker days has spurred some innovation in our household. We got light up vests and headlamps for walking and running when it's dark. The other great thing I discovered about the headlamp is that you have a running track near you and it's free of snow. You can run safely off the roads and still see where you're going. Chris, thank you so much. Also, Sarah in Concord writes, getting out for a winter walk or run isn't that difficult. Head to your local hiking or running store and pick up some nano spikes, which fit over your shoes or boots and are made for walking on ice. And Sarah says, if you need extra motivation, check out Runner's Alley's Winter Warrior Challenge, where they encourage you to walk or run between 1 and 5 miles outside every day in January. Wow. Thanks to Sarah as well. And I think I'll turn to you first, Jay, please. What about gear? I mean, you do have to think about it a little bit more when you get outside, both in terms of staying warm, not getting wet, and being seen, you know, by the cars, as Chris and Hooksett writes. So go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, well, those are great messages actually from both of them, because I did a little bit of quick shopping this morning just to see, because I was curious, because I think we also want to keep things as low cost as we can. And when I looked, for under $100, you can get that LED lit vest that she talked about. You can get a nice lightweight headlamp, and you can also get those micro spikes, right? You hear of Yak Tracks and lots of other great options. And literally with those three things, it just changes the whole game in terms of being outside. I know some of our listeners are in more urban areas and you're worried about cars in the street and whether the sidewalks are icy. And having, you know, the micro spikes in a little backpack or even in the pocket of a jacket just gives you that's a little bit more of a sense of safety. And the lit vests now, I mean, for $20, you can get just, I mean, you've probably seen them driving around. Our listeners, you know, you're very aware of the folks. And I mean, we know in the parking lots with our ski practice, you know, even at 4:30 at this time of year.
Oh yeah, gets dark early.
So safety is, of course, a big concern. But on the clothing side, you know, wool socks. I want to make a big plug for those. Low cost, and what a difference it can make. You know, even just a pair of running shoes or loafers, if you put on a pair of good wool socks and you can go for a 30-minute walk, and you could even be walking in dry snow and be comfortable. And I think keeping things simple is really important. So if you've got, you know, good long underwear pants, long underwear top, some wool socks, ideally layers, as Jay was talking about from the top of Mount Washington. What I see far more often than people getting cold is because they're dressed too warmly. They'll put a long sleeve cotton shirt on and then they'll put a big parka over it and go out. And actually, one, cotton against the skin, avoid it. But two, just the layers allow you to take something off, put it around your waist. Don't sweat, as he said. It makes a huge difference. And I think just trying to keep things basic and remembering what's against your skin. If you've got wool socks against your skin, you've got long underwear on the bottom and top, then it, you don't need to have all of the high tech pieces that can just run a whole lot of money. Just something that's not going to overwhelm you. You can just get outside and just realize that you don't need a lot of clothing if you're really just moving along. So that'd be my quick answer on that.
Well, and speaking of, you know, gear, and it doesn't need to be fancy or expensive, Karen writes, I live in the Lakes region and in recent years have found that a lack of snow combined with rain and ice make outdoor exercise less appealing and less safe. Karen, I've seen the same thing. Last winter, Karen says, my snowshoes got no use. I did some walks on the trails at the local state park, but had to be careful of ice patches. These conditions make it risky for older people who fear a fall. Since we can't control the weather, Karen says, I can only recommend getting some attachable ice cleats and trekking poles for safety and balance. And Karen, thank you for that, because we don't always have, you know, beautiful, fluffy snow out there. And sometimes we don't have time to drive to places that do. So thanks for that. And let's go back to the phones. Mike is calling from Lyme. Hi, Mike. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. I'm an associate of Jay Davis and would like to give a shout-out to him. He's a tremendous motivator for the whole Upper Valley and probably does more to bring along the next generation of young outdoor winter enthusiasts as anyone I've ever known. I've had some experience with motivating athletes right up to the Olympic level, and I would say I heard at one point the hardest step to get motivated, the hardest step you'll take is the one out the front door. And I would reiterate that I've never been regretful or heard anybody regret going out in the winter and having an adventure. And when you step outdoors in a challenging environment at night in the winter, you're going to be guaranteed an adventure. And if you're geared up with the right gear, with a good headlamp, and you're walking through the woods or a park with that white orb against that little glow orb against the cold night, it's just something that everyone will remember and get tremendous benefit from. So getting out there and just doing it is huge. And one other cold weather conditioning trick, and I know Jay does this also, and we've done it for a lot of years, is try to expose yourself to some cold water dips or a cold water shower at the end. And it does an amazing adaptation for your body to deal with cold weather as you go through your days, or if you're outdoors intermittently, you'll have better circulation out to your toes and hands, and found it very useful. So get outdoors and enjoy it.
Well, Mike, I love what you said about, you know, sometimes the hardest thing about getting outdoors in winter is just stepping outside the door. And one trick that I've done with myself with any exercise is I only have to do it for 20 minutes. That's it. Only 20 minutes. And most of the time it ends up being 30 or 40 or 50, but even 20 minutes is great. So I really appreciate that. Back to our listeners. And Rebecca in Milford says, shout out to the Merrimack Premium Outlets. Their sidewalks are always dry and a great place for an outdoor walk when you just can't handle another uncertain step. But I also work out all winter outside because I need to see the sun, Rebecca writes. And Liz, I'm so glad that listeners are talking about, you know, they're kind of getting real. They're saying, look, sometimes it feels really slippery, really kind of scary out there. Go find the dry, safe places. What do you think, Liz?
Well, I think safety and obviously risk prevention should be one of the priorities if that is something that that is of concern. I myself have taken two pretty hard falls as runner, as a runner, and broken bones. And I think that we all have to, you know, make those choices. I absolutely agree with the fact that there is a lot of really amazing tools out there. The spikes that now come in multiple sort of teeth sizes for everything from walking on just roads and pavement to walking through the woods on icier trails are really helpful. I think they're one of the best tools out there. Getting on snowshoes instead of walking on the roads, I think is a great idea. It's something I do myself a lot. It's just sometimes a lot safer. You know, we all struggle, I think, with that in-between winters like we had last year, where there was a lot of ice and not a lot of snow in certain places. And yes, I mean, seeking out places where you can go, I think the Merrimack Outlets is a great idea. I know there's some people that even go over to Steeplegate Mall here in Concord, and they'll, even though it's indoors, at least it gets them out of the house, and they can socially distance, they can wear masks, and they can walk in there for half an hour, 40 minutes, and it's very safe, and it's not crowded. So I think you have to seek out what you feel most comfortable with. There's definitely an aspect of getting outdoors, getting getting a little bit of vitamin D, although this time of year it's super tough to get as much as we need. And one of the things that I find really works for me and a lot of my clients is having a buddy. So whether it's the winter weather challenge that Warrior Challenge that Runner's Alley does, which is fantastic, or having somebody that will get out with you in the dark with a headlamp that kind of holds you accountable to getting out the door, but also from a safety perspective, you have somebody with you in case something were to happen, you know, power in teams, if you will. But I think that's one of the things. I know I'm very fortunate that I have a very brilliant posse of funny and caring women that we get up at O dark 30 and run really early in the morning together. And if someone's waiting and someone else doesn't show up, that's tough.
Peer
that's
pressure.
A tough thing, but peer pressure. But there's something magical about the frost on the eyelashes and the stars and just the still cold that you don't get in the summer. That you get in the wintertime.
It gets to what Jay said earlier, I think, Liz, is, you know, just the fact that you did it. And again, even if you're only out there for 20, 30 minutes, you did it. And that's an accomplishment. And, you know, boy, with our lives being so weird and disrupted and every day is Blur's Day, you know, what day is it? That's a great thing to sort of say, okay, at a bare minimum, I did that. We are going to take a very short break. Heading into the break, though, I want to read another email from Brian in Bartlett who says, and we've been talking about this, micro spikes, the best single thing to happen to my hiking in a lifetime. Well worth the money, Brian says. So, Brian, thank you for writing in. When we come back, we will talk about Jay Davis's winter swimming routine. Not exactly swimming, but getting into the cold water in the wintertime. We'll talk about that, and we'll take a lot more of your calls and emails. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, staying active in winter, even in a pandemic, this year more than ever, how can we adopt that Norwegian concept called friluftsliv, which basically means embracing an outdoor lifestyle no matter what the weather? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Liz Durant and Jay Davis, wow, so much input from our listeners today. It's great. So let's go back to them. And Bill in Concord is on the line. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling The Exchange. Go ahead.
Sure. My pleasure. Great show and great network. So I'm in my mid-50s, and in the past couple of winters have started to do uphill skiing, which I recommend people consider if they you know, like downhill, but aren't great at it, which is kind of me. And I like cross country, but I'm not great at it. And I want to get some exercise. So it's also called alpine touring or AT skiing. And it's famous in places like Tuckerman Ravine, but you can also do it at resorts. And you check with the resort. Most of them have policies now. We typically go to the Sunday River or Sugarloaf in Maine. And you ski uphill on the side of the downhill slope. And it's a workout, but you can stop anytime and rest.
Right.
So your heel comes up, and it's a regular, like, downhill boot, and then it locks in place for the downhill part. And for people who are more into it, you can do backcountry places. There's actually a great organization called Granite Backcountry Alliance, which has a website, that.org, that skis what they call glades, you know, and abandoned resorts and lots of places. I'm not skilled enough to do that stuff, but a lot of people are. I also wanted to endorse what one of your guests said about having a why. So I find having a plan, like if I have a planned week when I'm going to do a bunch of uphill skiing, you know, a week off vacation or something, I'm much more motivated to go out and jog than I would be if I'm just doing it, you know, for its own sake. You know, like, oh, I've got this thing coming up, so I better not wimp out today and go do my jogging. And the last thing I was going to mention is that New York Times a couple of days ago had an article about a study that said 11 minutes of exercise a day may counter the effects of sitting.
I saw that, and we're all we're all sitting a lot these days, aren't we, Bill? So, so it's really great to hear from you, and I did want to let listeners know that we did a whole program on that Granite State Backcountry Alliance, people who hike up the mountain and then ski back down. So definitely check our website, nhpr.org/exchange, if you want to see more about that, including I think there's still a great video there of somebody doing it. Bill, thank you for calling. And Nina emails, I haven't heard anyone mention indoor workouts during the wintertime. I have a toddler, I'm 6 months pregnant. So between watching my two-year-old outside and minimizing slip risk for myself, I get all of my exercise in my living room. We still try to get outside every day for the fresh air and sunlight, but it's nice to know I got my exercise in, and then I can just enjoy playing outside with my son. So Nina, thank you. It's important to note that not everybody can get outside if you have small children or other obligations. Cleta in New Ipswich writes, having a dog or other livestock, make sure you get out no matter what the weather is. Make sure you take your phone in case you fall and hope that you have coverage. And then Michael asks, is there a temperature when it becomes dangerous to run in winter? I used to run in northern Maine with a ski mask and a hat at zero and below temperatures and would have to break the ice off my mask at the end. Liz Durant, you mentioned that you run outside in the wintertime with your group of workout buddies. What about Michael's question, Liz?
It's a great question. And I think that for most people, it's personal preference. You know, tolerating certain levels of cold, you know, ours is pretty much 0 to 4 is our level of, but a lot depends on whether or not you are able to keep warm when you're out in those kinds of temperatures. Obviously continuing to move, people who run faster tend to, you know, be able to stay a little bit warmer than people who run a little bit slower. Depends where you live. Making sure you have the right gear, that your face is covered, in those colder temperatures to make sure that you don't take in too much really, really cold air. But obviously with anything like that, if you have any underlying conditions, the most important thing is to make sure that you have clearance from a medical professional, that it's okay to do that. Because there are certain people who have respiratory issues, whether it's asthma or otherwise, that may need to take a different approach. So it's not really a one size fits all type approach, but the most important thing is to get enough information about what is best for you.
Well, and Russell emails to share a winter trail resource, trailfinder.info, Russell says, is a free public website that features over 700 publicly accessible trails in New Hampshire and Vermont. The Upper Valley Trails Alliance manages the website in cooperation with a number of public and private groups. All trails are trail manager and landowner approved. Russell says you can search by activity, type, location, and difficulty level. Hundreds of thousands of users have visited the site each year, and especially during COVID, it is a great way to find information on your local trails. And Jay Davis, I guess you're probably nodding your head, even though I can't see you. Other resources for people to, you know, find a place to go.
Yeah, that's great. And such a wonderful set of comments from listeners. And I would just make one quick plug for just the little hand warmers and foot warmers can make a huge difference, because as Liz said, different people have different tolerances, and just having that knowledge that you're not having to worry about your cold fingers can be great. 100%. But Upper Valley Trails Alliance, Russ just wrote in about, they do a wonderful program with 31 different schools, I think it is, called Passport to Winter Fun. And what's great about it, and also the New England Nordic Ski Association, or NENSA, has been doing wonderful work, sort of how to support people virtually, right? To people, like particularly in Vermont, where kids can't even come together for their ski programs. And so how do we provide options and inspiration for people to get outside? And so what you're finding is all of these collections of resources, like the Passport for Winter Fun, which encourages kids to check off all these different things that they might do outside, or the NENSA site, which has this bingo program, which has places where kids can check off going to different cross-country ski areas or doing different activities outside. I mean, even when you walk into our mudroom in my house, we've got, you know, the blackboard paint on the wall, and we have just a bucket list of things to do that are particular to the season that we're in. And I think sometimes in the winter, one of the things that we struggle with is people focus on what winter is not, right? The things that it doesn't have that they miss from other times of the year. And that's obviously understandable, But what are the things about winter that are unique and that you can only take advantage of at that time? And, you know, when it's a snowstorm, what is it like to walk outside in the snowstorm? Or when it's a full moon just rising and to go for a walk at night? Somebody mentioned disc golf at night, you know, in the cold. But that bucket list provides just little bits of inspiration that goes back to what you were talking about in Liz as well, about what gets you out the door. And the bucket list could have something like, you know, we're gonna ice skate on a new pond this winter, or it's we're gonna have hot chocolate by the fire together after we build a snow fort if you have kids, or just
or kids. Not.
And I think that just those things that can say, ah, this is what's wonderful about winter, and right. We want to take advantage of. That's a little bit of a pivot and a kind of changing of our framework, which can really help begin to enjoy and just like visit one piece of land, whether it's a stream or it's the town park or something, and visit it repeatedly. Keep going back to it. See how it changes in the winter, because it can change dramatically just in a few hours. And I think that kind of connection to a piece of land is really healthy in all sorts of ways.
Here's an email from Kristen that I do want to share, because so many listeners have written in about micro spikes, and definitely these are very helpful when you have icy conditions, which we've seen a lot lately. But Kristen says, I maintain trails in New Hampshire, and the advent of micro spikes has had a serious impact on our trails. Kristen says, I use them, I love them, but it comes at a cost if we aren't responsible. Often winter and the shoulder seasons, meaning sort of March and November, with freeze-thaw patterns, there are bare spots on trails, even when there is snow and ice on the majority of the treadway. Please, please, Kristen says, do not walk on exposed soils with microspikes or creepers. It tears up the soils, even when frozen. As a year-round hiker, I do understand the inconvenience of this, but I want the trails to remain in a usable state, and therefore we all have a responsibility to take good care of the land we use. Kristen, thank you for writing in about that. I appreciate it. Stephen Nashua also says, safety reminder, some wear masks outdoors on public trails, some do not. All trail users should keep at least a 6-foot social distance. So Steve, thank you for writing in. And here's another email from John in East Thetford, who says, my buddy who would lead winter outings for kids always said, cotton is rotten, dress like an onion, so lots of layers, your head and neck are a chimney, put a cap on them to keep heat in. I love that, John. Cotton is rotten, dress like an onion, your head and neck are a chimney. Thank you for writing in. So Kay and Sullivan writes, we've always been active in winter. My husband's motto is there is no bad weather, just bad clothing. So we bundle up, we walk a couple of miles every day. I love to cross-country ski. We live in a rural area with woods and a hill just outside our door. But now I'm 71 and have osteoporosis, so I'm trying to figure out if it's still safe for me to ski. Kay, thank you, and I'm sorry to hear about that. And Liz, you said that you work in particular with women over 50. And boy, you know, at that age, especially for women, there is a real fear of falling because it can have consequences. So what do you think, Liz?
That's such a great question. And just as a point of personal connection, I too was just diagnosed with osteoporosis this year at 58. So it can happen at any point, no matter how active you are, especially with a genetic component. And, you know, risk assessment is something that is probably one of the first things that one needs to do. There are lots of activities that one can participate in where the risk is lower. And I'm going to step a little bit away from just the exercise piece to, you know, more of the overall well-being and health piece when it comes to women, especially who are aging and maybe at a higher risk for osteoporosis. And that is, you have to not only keep, the goal is to keep yourself to be active. I mean, that's one of the most important ways to keep those bones strong. Minimize risk, but the other aspects of life are equally as important. Things such as adequate sleep, lowering your stress levels, and good nutrition can all contribute to keeping you active. So, you know, skiing, if there's plenty of snow and you're out skiing in a, you know, in a field and maybe not on a technical wooded trail, it might have a lower risk, if you will. Running on roads, risk goes up a little bit, especially if the roads have, you know, a little bit of snow and ice on them. So, you know, finding things that you can do that are appropriate, and also the mental piece of managing the risk, I think we all have experienced sometimes when we get into our heads about I'm going to fall. And 10 seconds later, guess what? You fall. That's something that we all have to sort of figure out what our comfort level is with it. But I think that finding those activities that we can do as we age, where we can minimize risk, but still stay active doing them, is very possible, but also something that you have to plan.
Well, both of you, we could have talked a lot longer, and I wish we had more time, but come back next winter and maybe you can re-motivate us. For now, though, I really appreciate it. Jay Davis, it was really nice to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here.
That's Jay Davis, Assistant Dean of Undergraduate Students at Dartmouth College, where he directs first-generation students. Jay is also head coach of the Ford Sayer Bill Koch League Nordic program in the Upper Valley. Liz Durant, great to have you too. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Laura.
That's Liz Durant, owner of Affinity Fitness, a fitness and nutrition company providing personal training, nutrition, lifestyle coaching. Liz is also an instructor at several Concord area gyms. We will have lots of the links and websites and so forth mentioned today on our show at our website. It's nhpr.org/exchange. So if you want to know about those trail finders and so forth that came up, again, it's nhpr.org/exchange. Today's program was produced by Exchange producer and NHPR news host Jessica Hunt. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.